This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teck. My guest today is Dr. Shamsurani Muhammad Jamal, a consultant of emergency physician at UKM Medical Centre. She's also a member of Wanita Ikram and is involved in Mothers Against Pornography, of which she is a secretariat. This topic, Mothers Against Pornography, is exactly what I hope to talk to Dr. Surya about. Dr. Surya, welcome. How did this idea for Mothers Against Pornography come about?
Well, thank you for having me. AMP was actually founded in 2013 by a group of doctors who are also mothers. So the initial name was actually Mawar Putih, or White Roses. It was founded based on our concern on the society issues and problem, especially on baby dumpings, rape, right, and also sexual abuse. So we had educational modules and for school children on sexual education. So therefore, we went to schools and we teach them on sexual education. Throughout the years, from our readings and our experiences, we found that one of the factors that contribute to these issues of rape and baby dumping is actually pornography. And also with the use of increased use of gadgets in the recent years, then pornography becomes more of a problem. So hence, we incorporated pornography and social media into our module. So that's why around 2015, the name was changed to Mother Against Pornography. And at the end of 2015, Wanita Ikram took MEP as an initiative under their wing, and it was officiated since then in October 2015.
White Roses, why?
Why roses? Yes. Okay. Well, it's mainly because it's very pure. And when we started this, we are mothers. So it is as simple as that, you know. That's why. I mean, we've been asked a few questions, why not include fathers and that sort of thing. I mean, there's no reason for it. Basically, because we're mothers. And why initially we think that it was roses? Because roses are pure. And you know that roses got thorns. So we have to have, I mean, ladies or children, females, you have to have things to protect yourself. So that's the whole idea about it initially.
Then how did you establish this link that baby dumping and rape was related to porn?
Well, it's basically because when we did our modules, we do a lot of readings, okay? We look at studies and that sort of thing. So there are a few studies in the recent years, especially in overseas, that actually relate. And when they look at it, they see that few factors actually cause all these social problems, and one of it is pornography. Then we look at the Malaysian statistics. There's not many Malaysian statistics on the issue itself. However, we've got a few, and especially in 2014, there was this study that was done in Selangor. It involves about 400 children. And out of that 400 children, 50% of them are actually exposed to pornography. Okay, so we thought that maybe that's no connection, you know.
Sorry, what's the age group of these children?
13 to 18.
13 to 18, okay.
Yeah. And then on another study, it's on the north part of Malaysia, Pulau Pinang, you know, Kedah and Perlis. They found that about 800 children, roughly, each also about 13 to 18, and about 36% of them is involved in sexual activities. And again, in that study, they think that one of the factors is also pornography. I think when we look at it and we look at the increase in the usage of internet and media in the last 10 years, although there's no direct connection or direct relationship. So you've got increase of the internet and media, and you've got increase of the sexual crimes as well. So that sort of gives us an idea that it is sort of related.
But why hone in on pornography in this instance? Why not maybe raise more awareness about sexual education, for example?
Okay. It is when we started initially, we wanted to do sexual education. And if you knew that, basically sexual education has been, there's some awareness on sexual education. In fact, sexual education has been part of some of the syllabus, part of the syllabus in our schools. So pornography is actually slightly bigger than that, in a sense that if you have knowledge on sexual education, if you have knowledge on your body and you know which part of the body that is actually should be exposed or not exposed, or what is the effect or impact of doing certain things. So that actually part of pornography as well. So our education modules encompass all that. So we don't go and talk only on pornography. The initial talk is usually on sexual education, and then we'll talk on social media as well as pornography.
What has been the reaction you get when you talk to children this young about pornography?
Oh, there's a lot of reaction. Some of them are very honest. Some are actually very shy, especially the boys. So children, in younger children, like between 10, 11 or 12, they are very honest in a sense that if they watch, they actually say they've watched it, either whether they have watched it, you know, without actually wanting to watch it, you know, or, but usually in the higher age group, they are not that honest. So when we do talks, usually we get, we give them questionnaires for them to answer. And in one of our three schools that we went, we went to 29 schools last year. So we analyzed on three schools. It's the teenagers between 13 to 17, about 380 of them. And 80% of them is actually exposed to pornography materials already at that age. And
both boys and girls.
Both boys and girls, but more boys than girls. But it's sort of, although there's more boys than girls, but it's about the age that they are exposed is almost about the same. And the boys are exposed earlier, less than 10 years old. And the girls are exposed slightly later, around 11 sort of thing. And the age that they both, they watched the pornography most, for both of them, boys and girls, is 11 to 15 years old.
What is the setting that this this talk is conducted in? Because how do you know whether they're telling the truth? Because if they're in front of their peers, they might tend to be, like you mentioned, shy or not tell about
their
truth. So is it like a one-to-one or is it one person talking to a large group of students?
Okay, depending on the session, but it's usually in a large setting. And then sometimes we have, depending on the session that we have, sometimes we have small groups as well with few facilitators. So they don't usually open up to you. Okay, but then that's why it was really alarming when we get that statistics. Because, you know, when you give the talk, they don't actually appear to be in a group that actually watch pornography. But then when you've got the statistics, then you notice that, okay, they actually have watched it. So in a way, it's good because we feel that whatever we wanted to give them, they are able to understand that what they are seeing was the pornographic materials. And they are actually honest on answering the question. So that was good.
Most of them do it because they're just curious. Do they know that it's bad or good?
I'm not sure about that. I think if you ask my opinion, because we never educate our children on those issues, they watch pornography without they knowing they're actually watching it. So, for example, they are playing games. And then you've got pop-ups, you know, and they feel curious about it and they press on the pop-ups and they continue to watch the whatever movie or advertisement, but it's a pornographic material. So that's the whole thing. When you started to watch and you were not educated on it or thought to actually delete it if you encounter it, then what happened is that they will continue to watch it. Because when they watch pornography, especially during the teenager's time, age, they will have some pleasurable effect from watching it. I mean, that's natural, you know. And because they were not thought that this is not good, this is unhealthy, the next time they will continue to watch it. So that's worrying.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Surya Jamal of Wanita Ikram about Mothers Against Pornography. I'll ask her what she thinks about porn addiction after this short break. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. My guest today is Dr. Sira Jamal of Wanita Ikram. We're talking about an initiative that she is spearheading called Mothers Against Pornography. Dr. Sira, how would you define what pornography is?
Pornography is actually has been around for quite some time. And in fact, even in the 19th century, you've got pornography materials. It's actually from the word pornograph from Greek, okay, which means prostitution, related to prostitution. So pornography basically is defined as any material. Either it is videos or books or articles, or it doesn't have to be on printed papers. It can also be online, and these materials cause some pleasurable effect on the person who's actually watching it. Okay, so it give them arousal when they watch it. So any material that caused that will—that is what pornography is all about. Yeah,
it could be a magazine cover. It could be
yes,
not even a human being.
Yes. Even a cartoon.
Right. So I guess implicit or the assumption in this initiative is that pornography is dangerous. What do we know about the current evidence on whether or not this is true?
In 2 years ago, there's a research done. It was published in a very good journal, a psychiatry journal. So the research was done by a German scientist. So what they did was that they studied on 64 healthy males, only males. Okay, so there's a bit of bias in it. But what they're trying to look at is they wanted to see whether there's any association of watching pornography or how much they watch pornography and its effect on the brain. So interestingly, what they found was that men that watch pornography has a smaller volume of this certain part of their brain. And that part of the brain is called striatum. And that part of the brain is responsible for the reward network. So what it means is that repeated exposure to pornography reduce the reward network response to pleasure, and that leads to addiction. However, it's not proven in a sense that they don't know whether this man, the 64 men, has already had that smaller volume prior to watching the pornography. So they cannot prove that. So what they found was that there's possible there's a relation. I mean, that's looking at biology or anatomy of it. However, a lot of studies have shown that pornography can cause addiction. Same like drugs, you know, same like smoking, you know, and also even playing games. So when It sort of related to your reward system. So when you watch pornography materials, it causes a pleasure effect. So there's release of dopamine from your brain. So when there's release of dopamine, and it gives a feel-good effect on yourself, and then you tend to want to see more and more and more. So that's how it causes addiction. It's basically it's the same as if they're taking drugs or they're taking marijuana and that sort of thing. It's the same thing.
Do we know in that study whether it stated what the threshold is? When does it become an addiction?
No, it didn't specify in that study.
Okay. Because just in doing some reading before the show, there are currently no official diagnosis for porn addiction, or at least not yet. And so would you still say it's dangerous if it's not an addiction?
Oh, okay. It is not a diagnosis, but it is actually a subset of a sex addiction. Sex addiction. So sex addiction is part of a diagnosis in the in DSM-5, which is the psychiatric diagnosis. So although it is not a diagnosis, it causes a behavioural change. So it does give you other effects in your social life and, even financial. It causes when you involve money and you wanted to get more points and that sort of thing. So yes, it is harmful.
I shared with you this piece of stat before the interview, that according to Pornhub, which is a website that produces pornographic content, their data revealed that Malaysian women are the 7th highest consumer of porn in the world. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that?
Okay. It's a bit difficult to comment on that. I mean, I don't usually rely on Pornhub data, mainly because I don't know the method they use to collect the data. However, if this is true, I think that's really worrying, mainly because we are the 7th highest consumer porn in the world. That means that there's a lot of watching pornography around. In fact, one of the data by Pornhub says that we are among the 5th that actually, on the average time that spends time on pornography, about 11 minutes to 12 minutes average. So among the world, even, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Japan was about 15 minutes, you know, so we're not far from them. So that's, I mean, that's really worrying.
This other main criticism of pornography is that it's harmful to relationship because porn sets an unrealistic expectation of what sex is. Mm-hmm. In the absence of porn, where should we turn to instead? What should be, you know, our guide?
Okay. Well, I guess it is true. I mean, pornography, it is harmful for relationship because in a sense that when somebody watch pornography, they've got a benchmark of what their or who their partner is, you know. So the pornography actor or actress are their role model of who they want their partner to become or look like. Okay, so that's a lot of fiction. There's no reality in it. That's why in I don't have a statistics in Malaysia, but from the studies on overseas, you know, that actually contribute to divorce rate. So where should we turn instead? I guess we should turn to the natural legal sexual relationship according to the religion and law, which is marriage, and not rely on the fiction created by the porn movies. No violence, no fantasy. You know, and sometimes they can have very horrified images of, you know, having sex with animals or having sex with children. And I think that's really unhealthy.
So going back to what you do in the classroom, talking to kids about sex education, would you advocate for censorship?
Yes.
You would?
Yep, definitely.
But these are kids who would be able to circumvent any kinds of censorship that the government might impose, or, you know, even in the household, if you have parental controls on how they use the internet, when they watch TV or how they use their smartphone. These are very resourceful people.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, both are true. But as law or legal or government, there's some, I mean, we should do something about it. I mean, doesn't mean that, you know, kids are tech savvy, that we should just allow them to do what they want. Prevention is always better than cure. So I guess explicit scenes should be removed from the movie, drama, music videos and that sort of thing. That's why, because of our kids are very tech-savvy nowadays, that's why education is very important. We have to tell them or teach them what it is all about rather than make it a taboo subject. That's what has been going on all these years anyway, you know. People always think that pornography is a taboo subject, not to talk about it. But if we don't talk about it, if we don't teach our children about it, they will anyway learn from it from other resources. So I guess we need to teach them. We need to be the first person who's actually exposed them to, not to expose them to pornography, but actually to teach them what pornography is all about and what they have to do if they found all these materials on the line or on the net, you know, to actually delete them, not to watch them. What happened if they watch them? What is the negative side effects of it? All that sort of things, yeah.
So let me put it to you this way. If there is a explicit scene in a movie, for example, don't you think it's a teachable moment for the parent, you know, to naturally raise the subject about the birds and the bees to with their kids?
Yeah, I've got that question before. I guess in a way, yes, you can. It's all about guided education. When they search the net by themselves, it's unguided information. So, but that does not mean that you watch pornography with your kids. What I'm actually saying is that when you do encounter certain scene, you have to explain to your kids what is right and what is wrong and what are they doing and that sort of thing. Yeah. As a doctor, I've in emergency department, I've come across many teenagers who were pregnant, single mothers, and or even got raped, and they don't know what actually happened to them. Although it's not related to pornography, but what I'm saying is that the reason is because I think we don't educate enough. We don't tell them explicitly what it's all about. We always, you know, a bit behind the bush sort of thing and not telling them the facts. Our children nowadays are not the same like 20 years ago. Okay, they are very resourceful. They are very intelligent. And they can find the knowledge and facts they want. You know, it's all Dr. Google is there. So I think parents need to learn and educate their children on sexual education as well as pornography.
When is it a good age to talk to your child about sex?
Okay, you can start talking to them about sexual education is very broad, okay? It is not just about sexual intercourse. It started from very early, even at the age of 2, when you started to teach them about their parts, their body parts. The first step is to actually tell them the correct terms for their body parts and not just use bee or bird or, you know, that sort of way. So just tell them directly that this is your genitals, this is your penis, you know, and the correct terms. So that, and to tell them what do they need to cover or not to let other people touch. That can start very early, from the age of 2 until the age of 6. And then when they start to go to primary school, we can start to explain to them slowly on the relationship between girls and boys, you know, the difference of physical behavior, emotion, and talk about hormones and other when they got bigger. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it'd be great if a parent can follow that timeline, you know, and explain as needed when the child becomes more mature and is able to understand. But real life don't often happen that way, isn't it? And
yeah.
A 6-year-old might just come up to you one day and ask, "Mommy, what's sex?" Do you have any strategies or advice for parents on how they should bring that up? Because if you don't answer, he or she's going to get the answer from someone else.
Yes, true. I mean, the first strategy is not to lie or to avoid the question. Okay. Whenever you know, your children ask you about sex or, you know, what is or anything got to do with sex, you have to explain to them. It's just that how you explain to them differs from age to age. In a younger children, you might tell them sex is a relationship between a man and a woman, like me and your father, for example. Okay, and you know, and we can have a baby. As simple as that. But when they get older, you have to be more explicit. It cannot just be man and woman and get a baby. Okay? So it has to be more explicit and tell how and where does the baby comes from, how does the baby comes out and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
So from the school side, as a parent, what would you like to see as part of the syllabus or curriculum in terms of sex education?
Oh, okay. Definitely a very good sexual education in the curriculum of the schools. And it's not just one-off subjects. It has to be ongoing from the first, you know, from standard one, even up to when they are already from five. Because at different age, they have different development process going on. So children need to understand that.
Would you want to see it as a subject on its own or part of biology?
A subject of its own.
On its own.
Definitely.
Throughout the years in all.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, they have to have modules. Even in Australia, you know, US, they've got modules for sexual education. And these modules include a lot of other things as well, including how to protect yourself from being sexually abused, you know, how to maintain privacy and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
So where are we now and how far do we need to go to get to that place?
Well, I think there is some sexual education syllabus in our school curriculum now. However, I think that there's lack of training among the teachers to actually talk on the topic itself. Just as an example, my children told me that, you know, when they talk about sexual education, it's just about reading the books, you know, which is not, I think it can be strengthened further. You know, they need to explain. It has to have question and answers because children are very curious. They want to know certain answers. Yeah, so yes.
As part of the campaign to raise awareness, you'll be organising a run. Mm. Why a run?
Okay, we wanted to do an activity that bring all walks of life on the same platform. So when we do seminars and forums and talks and that sort of thing, we only attract certain group of people. And it will not cater for everybody. So that's why we wanted to find a neutral platform for the society to actually acknowledge that pornography is a social issue. Hence the reason that we organised the run. However, it's not just a run. The run is actually part of a campaign, of a 4-month campaign. It started from July, August, September, and it's end with the run in October. So we hope within these 4 months of the Love of Myself campaign, we will be able to create some awareness among the society, among the Malaysians, on pornography. It's actually, the idea is to bring the subject out rather than to not talk about it and keep it a taboo subject. Yeah,
yeah. I noticed the title of the run is Love Myself, Bahagia Tanpa Pornography. Mm-hmm. Is self-love the antidote to pornography addiction?
Well, we've been given this life by God. So I guess it's our responsibility to love, cherish and take good care of oneself. People who love themselves usually will have passions in life. They will feel contented. They will give good examples to other people. So, and they are very responsible and trustworthy of themselves. So that's the whole idea. The whole idea is for you to be responsible on yourself and to make good decision. Okay, so not just not to be involved with pornography, but also to not to be involved in other negative behaviour.
Would you have a final message on how people can get in touch or get more information about the campaign or just your message about pornography?
Okay. Pornography is not just an issue. It is a real problem. We would really like to invite all Malaysian, regardless race, religion and culture, to actually work together on the same platform, fighting pornography. And the idea is basically to create a healthy society. So we would welcome anybody that would like to work with us. For the campaign itself, so far we've got few partners. MCMC is one of our partners. Yayasan Pendidikan Khalifah, who's got a few schools, also our partners, PS the Children as well. Okay, so the idea is to have collaboration with all the NGOs and the societies that really interested in protecting the children from pornography or even sexual misconduct, and hopefully for the betterment of the society.
Dr. Sira, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.